Growth Energy is a proactive group made up of American ethanol producers who are dedicated to growing America's economy through cleaner, greener energy. It is our fundamental belief that ethanol is America's best renewable fuel. It's high-tech, homegrown, and on the verge of innovative breakthroughs that will make it even cleaner and greener for the long term. At this pivotal time in America's history, we joined together and created Growth Energy because we believe ethanol is our nation's growth energy, renewable, realistic, and clean burning. A strong biofuels industry will create American jobs and stimulate economic growth. And we can continue creating cleaner and greener fuels through 21st century technology and innovation. We also believe biofuels will stimulate the growth of sustainable agriculture on the more than 1 billion acres of idle cropland worldwide, providing crops for both food and fuel, and that an energy-independent America is achievable, and ethanol is the most important first step to making it a reality. Through smart policy reform and a proactive grassroots campaign, Growth Energy promotes reducing greenhouse gas emissions, expanding the use of ethanol and gasoline, decreasing our dependence on foreign oil, and creating American jobs at home. Because we believe ethanol is an essential component of our nation's energy policy, we also feel it is incumbent upon us to set the record straight regarding food prices. Now I'd like to introduce the CEO of ICM, Dave Vandegrin. ICM, along with Fagan and Poet, three of the founders of this industry, are also founders of this new organization and committed to its mission.
Good morning. Months ago, before we really became concerned about the Wall Street bonuses, bankruptcies, and bailouts, Big Food was misleading the Americans regarding the increased cost of food. They told the American public that because of ethanol, they had to raise the price of the household basics like cereals, meats, and other packaged goods. And they did just that. Milk was up 80 cents. Ground beef was up 14 cents a pound. The cost of food at home had increased 7.6% in the last year. American families haven't seen such dramatic price increases in the last 20 years. Then, to add insult to injury, the major food producers, under the leadership of the Grocers Manufacturers Association, launched an audacious campaign to attack ethanol, claiming that it was the leading driver in the rising cost of food. These major food producers exaggerated ethanol's impact on corn prices, and then again corn prices' impact on global poverty and food prices. They ignored the impact of rising oil prices on the transportation of their goods, which topped $140 a barrel. I have to hand it to them. The Grocery Manufacturers Association launched and conducted a brilliant public relations campaign with top-shelf communication strategists. They worked with hunger organizations, with columnists, public officials who once supported ethanol now became our biggest critics. GMA didn't let the fact get in the way, even when they came from nonpartisan government agencies. Last spring, in the middle of their campaign, the USDA warned Congress, they warned the media, they warned others about the flawed analyses that were being done. But it was too late. The food versus fuel debate had already been framed. But this does beg a number of questions that I would like to ask. If we had a corn shortage caused by the ethanol industry, why is the corn price down to almost half of what it was just 6 months ago? Why did we have record exports of corn this year compared to any other year? Why did we have a 1.5 billion bushel surplus of corn this year? And that represents over 10% of our annual production. Who is funding this elaborate campaign to to deflect attention away from what should be the real debate. Fast forward a few months. Today, corn prices have dropped by more than half. They're down to less than $4 a bushel, which is below the cost of production. Oil prices have tumbled to less than $65 a barrel. Yet food prices continue to go up, and so do the mega profits of the major food companies. While Americans struggle to make ends meet, the revenue of one major food producer, Kraft, saw an increase of nearly 20% from the year earlier period. That company's net income shot up in the third quarter to $1.4 billion, while Americans watch their purchasing power decrease and their incomes dwindle. Sales of another big food company, Kellogg, climbed 9.5% in the third quarter. Net income increased to $342 million, up from $305 million the year earlier. This raises the question, now that commodity prices are back down and big food is raking in the cash, when will they cut their prices? When will they give Americans the relief they need and the relief that they deserve? Shockingly, despite what the GMA argues at the time, demand for ethanol continues to rise even though corn prices are down. And we're not the only ones who have noticed that. And the once framed food versus fuel debate was nothing more than a sham cooked up by the food industry. When oil and commodity prices rose in early 08, big food reflected their higher prices almost immediately, passing the burden on to American families. Now that oil and commodities prices are falling, will big food cut the food prices again back to the American families? The data contained in the policy paper we are releasing today further proves what we've known all along. Food prices and ethanol production are not strongly linked. We cannot allow big food to be the barrier to real progress in attaining energy independence, a stronger economy, a cleaner, greener environment, growing American jobs, and retaining American dollars here in this country. Today, major food producers are faced with a clear choice. They can really do one of two things. They can admit that their argument on ethanol was wrong and rationalize today's high food prices away in some other way, or they can stand by their claim and let us know when food prices will drop and ease the burden on the consumer. Either way, they should give Americans a break at the grocery store and bring their prices back down. With that, I'd like to reintroduce Jeff Broin. Thanks.
Thanks, Dave. I'm pleased to announce Growth Energy's new advertising campaign that begins this week. The first ad ran yesterday in roll call, and additional ads will run in the New York Times. As Dave mentioned, corn prices for both food and fuel have plummeted, but food prices have stayed high. This disproves any significant correlation between corn ethanol and the grocery bills of American families. We think that American families have a right to know why our grocery bills are the same, and why are the grocery manufacturers still blaming ethanol, even now that corn prices have dropped. The answer to high prices is simple economics. Grocery manufacturers are making record profits, and they'll keep charging whatever they think they can get away with. We will not allow them to smear ethanol in the process. It's time to put aside food versus fuel and focus on the facts. Americans have a right to know what we have known for years. Ethanol isn't the reason prices are high. The food manufacturers are. It's time to find someone else to blame. Learn more at growthenergy.org. I'd like to introduce Tom Bias, President of National Farmers Union.
Thank you, Jeff. And first, I commend Growth Energy for their efforts to get this message out there. As you all know, this has been a concern of farmers and ranchers and people in rural communities for a long time because everyone wanted to blame higher commodity prices for higher food prices. And despite our efforts to try to convince them otherwise, it became sort of the consensus that higher corn prices, higher wheat prices. We're causing people to go hungry. We're putting a big crimp on everyone's pocketbook. And yet, at that same time, when prices dropped, we didn't see the corresponding reductions in food prices. So again, I commend Growth Energy for their outstanding effort to try to get out there and tell the real story. We talk a lot about the farmer's share of the food retail dollar. And if you get a chance and you go to NFU.org and you look at that farmer's share of the food retail dollar, and you'll see that a lot of these products that food manufacturers like to blame on commodity prices, and ethanol in particular, there's no correlation. You see prices go up greater by the entire amount of the raw commodity in those products. And as prices dropped, it's not followed suit. You know, farmers work hard, and they deserve a profit, just like anyone else. And this past year, many farmers started to receive a profit from the marketplace. Everyone says you got to get away from government assistance, but the only way you can do that is to actually have an economically sustainable operation. Renewable energy, ethanol, cellulosic, solar, wind, all will play a role in helping rural America and farmers make a decent income. If you want to look what revitalizes our economy, it's new energy. And ethanol is part of that new energy. It's efficient, and it's economically efficient, environmentally friendly, and a major component for our future. We can feed our country. We can fuel our country. We've been overproducing for years. You look at this year. We've got low commodity prices. When everyone said we were running out, prices were going to go through the roof. We had the worst possible planting conditions in the Corn Belt ever. We still produce the second largest corn crops in addition to exporting the most we've ever done, the most going to energy. We can produce it. This is good. We just need to tell our story. And again, I commend Jeff and Growth Energy for doing that. Let me introduce the chairman of Green Plains Renewable Energy, Wayne Hovestall.
Thank you, Tom. Today is only the beginning for Growth Energy. Ethanol producers are actively providing a solution today in these tough economic times by producing America's growth energy, ethanol. Ethanol is our best renewable fuel. It's reliable and affordable now. Ethanol provides green jobs that can't be outsourced and produces high-tech, homegrown renewable fuel that reduces the price of gas and our reliance on foreign oil. The American people, now more than ever, understand that ethanol stimulates our domestic economy instead of sending dollars and jobs overseas. Each day we import 12 million barrels of oil, which comprises nearly 60% of the oil our nation consumes. By investing in ethanol and expanding to higher blends beyond E10, we keep our money at home, create greener jobs, and make our nation more energy independent. Ethanol producers are on the verge of innovative breakthroughs that will make ethanol even cleaner and greener for the long term. As science moves from making ethanol from corn to producing it from other cellulosic products like corn cobs and other plant materials, ethanol will continue to be a sustainable and effective energy solution for the world. Through the Renewable Fuel Standard, the RFS, the U.S. government has mandated a gradual increase in the country's use of renewable fuels like ethanol until 2022, when the mandate reaches 36 billion gallons.
Thank you.
However, with the current government regulations restricting the ethanol blend to E10, the country will hit an artificial regulatory cap and will not be able to use a volume of ethanol greater than the 10% in our fuel supply. Ethanol producers expect to hit that cap in 2009. In order to move to higher blends and more fully realize the tremendous potential of ethanol, a waiver must be issued by the EPA or granted by Congress. Failure to remove this cap before it occurs will slow the development of next-generation ethanol technologies and jeopardize us meeting the RFS.
This time, we'd be happy to take questions from members of the press, both in the room as well as on the phone.
given that there are there's at least one and I think some other existing trade associations for biofuels producers, why did you feel the need to form a new organization, and are you still members of the RFA?
Actually, we believe the Growth Energy will be a new, fresh, aggressive voice in the energy debate. We will be working with other trade associations in the industry, trying to drive the good message of ethanol forward.
Good morning. David Givens, publisher of Ethanol and Biodiesel News. The discussion about an EPA waiver above 10% for ethanol has been in the works for many months now. Why hasn't anything been put on paper yet?
Well, today, obviously, we are limited by a 10% regulatory cap in existing automobiles, and that is an issue for the industry, and in fact, has caused ethanol to be substandard priced to gasoline for quite some time. I can assure you that our organization will be very involved in that effort, and if our country is truly serious about energy independence, ethanol is one of the only ways we're going to get there in the short term.
Little pressure at the Des Moines Register. I just want to follow up on the first question again. I'm unclear what exactly your role of the organization is going to be beyond this initial ad campaign, and how is it different than what RFA and EPIC are doing and currently?
At Growth Energy, we really consider ourselves a moral purpose organization. Our goal is to fuel and feed the U.S. and eventually fuel and feed the world. So again, our goal is to be a fresh, aggressive, new voice in the energy debate.
Hi, I'm Chuck Abbott with Reuters. Hoping you could talk a little bit about the economics of the ethanol industry at the moment. I think that's probably a fair topic, considering you mentioned the concern about hitting the blend wall, and it would be interesting how the industry is faring approaching that wall when one of the three largest producers is under bankruptcy reorganization. And perhaps, Mr. Broyen, you can talk a little bit about your own company's intentions. A month ago, which seems like an eon in the financial world, you said with the economic downturn that this is a good time to go looking for acquisitions.
Well, many industries have seen tough times in today's economic situation. And our industry is no different. Just as any industry, has, I think, players that are well positioned for tough times, and maybe some of the not as well positioned for tough times, I'm sure that our industry would qualify as well. But we have seen tough times before. I've been in this industry 21 years. I've come through 1996 with $5 corn and $1 gasoline. So we've seen tough times before and certainly survived those. Our industry will survive and come out of this time, I think, very solid and successful. Our own plans, obviously, I think that the plants or the companies in the industry, that are well capitalized and that are today able to be profitable, we'll look for opportunities, and that's capitalism, that's the American way, and I think that's you'll see that happen in this industry as well as others. It's inevitable, I think, in every industry.
Our first question comes from the line of Siobhan Hughes with Dow Jones Newswire.
Hi, could you comment on BPA is supposed to be coming out with a biofuels analysis that takes into account indirect changes in land use, and I'm wondering what your understanding is of where that study stands, and if you think that some of the arguments the ethanol industry had been putting forward have had any effect.
I think there's been some really interesting things happening. Illinois, for example, did an ethanol plant analysis where they had results, 40% reduction in carbon. Also, Nebraska did that same study with dry mill ethanol plants with a 50% reduction. I think we're seeing a lot of the truth of ethanol and the benefits that ethanol gives to greenhouse gas and emissions and climate change and all those type of things are beginning to finally come out and get into the public arena and educate the public about the benefits of renewable fuels.
But in terms of indirect land use changes, what is your understanding of where things stand at the EPA?
I'm not exactly sure where they stand at the EPA. However, As we've talked about earlier, there is a billion acres globally that was farmland at one time and can again return to farmland. I personally was in Hungary last year where 25% of the land was not farmed. And the reason that was is because they couldn't make any money farming. And now that we are starting to see some parity in agricultural values, we are beginning to see a number of other countries that now will be able to take that abandoned land and put it back into production and, again, increase our ability to feed the world and fuel the world.
Margaret Ryan with Clean Skies TV News. The price volatility that we've seen in the last 12 months on the price of corn, as you've remarked, it hit record highs, and now it's below the cost of production. Can you comment, any of you, on the factors that brought us that level of volatility and whether we can expect to see it again?
I would love to comment on it. You know, everyone blamed ethanol. But really, if you go back in history, since we left the gold standard, you have high commodity prices whenever you have a weak dollar. We had the weakest dollar ever. We don't know what it's going to do here in the future. But that increased exports. We also had worldwide demand increases from other countries wanting to use corn for animal feed to improve their diets. At the same time, we had the biggest influx of money from Wall Street because they couldn't make money on Wall Street. They invested in the commodity market. It was excessive speculation. And if you notice, when Congress started talking about addressing the regulatory oversight of those markets, that money left the market, and that's when the collapse basically occurred in the corn market and many other commodity markets. To blame it on ethanol, there's no doubt ethanol helped increase demand for corn. But like any business, you have to have, from our perspective, you have to have demand and supply in balance. And that's what occurred. We weren't running out of corn like a lot of people feared or a lot of people reported. But all these other factors had a much bigger role. And, of course, energy, which, ironically, ethanol is designed to reduce our dependence on foreign oil. So you take all the combination of stuff, and that's why corn prices shot up.
Another question from the phone.
Our next question comes from the line of Tom Waterman from the Ethanol Monitor. Please proceed with your question.
Yes, good morning. This is to anybody on the panel. I get the feeling sometimes there's a disconnect when politicians talk about their enthusiasm for cellulosic ethanol, but then speak very negatively about corn-based ethanol. Can somebody explain the link between the two and the importance and the role that corn ethanol has to play in getting to next-generation fuels?
Well, it's it's critical that grain-based ethanol continue to be successful. Obviously, we need financing to build plants. And if grain-based ethanol continues to be successful, financiers are going to be interested in financing cellulosic ethanol plants. Same with the market. We need enough market out there to remove that 10% regulatory cap to have access to the market again so that we can attract finance for cellulosic ethanol. However, with the increased yields projected by DuPont and Monsanto, grain-based ethanol is going to need to continue to grow to use up surplus grain in this country to keep grain prices where we're not going to have to subsidize farmers. So if you look at the future and the projected yields, which will double in the next 20 years, the potential for grain-based ethanol is very great, and the potential for cellulosic ethanol is very great. They will both grow in the future.
You mentioned about growth of corn-based ethanol, but there's a cap of 15 billion gallons, which is essentially the same cap as the blend wall. How big a factor is that in limiting growth of corn-based ethanol?
Well, today there is... You want to tell me? Go ahead.
I think one thing to bear in mind, though, you cannot get 100% 10% ethanol in all gasoline. So when you're saying our U.S. consumption of gas at 150 billion gallons has been reduced, it's more like about 130 to 135 right now. And of that, a large percentage of that is just not accessible with ethanol or is not road use to begin with. So when you really start looking at where is this regulatory cap and where does it influence the price of ethanol today, And what we're really seeing is we're seeing it at a 10 billion gallon rate, and we're already there. So the ability for us to get to what I would say even the 15 billion RFS ceiling, we would need something like E15 or E20 average to be able to even attain that, let alone what's coming in from the development of the cellulosic side.
Our next question comes from the line of Dan Morgan from the Washington Post.
Yes, to follow up on the blender issue, the blender barrier, if you will, how much cooperation will you also need from the automobile industry in refining the warranties, automobile warranties, to take it above? My understanding is that at this point, they don't warranty anything above E10. So it's more than just a regulatory barrier that you're facing, is it not? It's also a barrier on the part of the manufacturers.
It is going to be important to have the cooperation of the auto industry to get above an E10 level in existing automobiles. We do have multiple studies underway to show that that higher blends above 10% work fine in existing autos. And there was a recent study released, actually several studies, but one recently released, I believe it was by EPA or DOE. Was released by DOE that actually confirmed that blends up to E20 did not change the maintenance in automobiles at all. And so there has been some great studies out there. There are more than 30 studies total underway on higher blends. And so we expect to have more data on that very soon.
Are you in do you talk to Detroit on this?
We have had numerous discussions with the automobile manufacturers on higher blends, yes.
Your next question comes from the line of Dan Looker from Successful Farming.
Thank you. This question is for Jeff Breuen. I just wondered if... by forming this group, the implication is that you're not really satisfied with the efforts made by the Renewable Fuels Association. They've done some advertising in the past, but one of their members, ADM, recently announced that they are investing in Brazilian sugarcane ethanol. Are you concerned that the Renewable Fuels Association no longer represents domestic ethanol producers' interest here in the U.S.?
I think as a group, we believe that the more associations, the better. You know, there are dozens, if not hundreds, of hunger organizations, and just as there are organizations in other industries that are numerous, we feel the more associations that we have, the better. Again, we want to have a fresh, aggressive voice in the energy debate, and I think that we want to carry that forward with the existing groups that are out there today.
So you're saying there's no implied criticism of the existing groups?
No, not at all.
Thank you.
Another question from the phone.
Our next question comes from the line of Rachel Gantt from Oil Price Information. Please proceed with your question.
Yes, hi, good morning. I wanted to find out why launch this ad campaign now when the food versus fuel debate has been out of the public spotlight for the past few months?
Well, actually, we predicted that this would happen. There were numerous studies completed by our industry that stated that this was the case. They were mostly ignored by the media, and again, we really predicted this would happen, and now it has. So this is the perfect time to bring this up because we have the proof today. The corn prices have dropped in half, proving that there is little correlation between ethanol and the price of food.
You're not worried about GMA, starting up another ad or something like that?
I would like, this is Tom Bias, Farmers Union. I'd like to respond to that. I think we need to set the record straight. There's this misconception that a lot of people think that farmers' ethanol caused this food price crisis. I have yet to see a story that said, oops, that wasn't the case. And we've seen a lot of front-page stories, even on bagel prices in Bethesda going up 15 cents a bagel and blaming it on wheat when there was only 12 cents worth of wheat in that bagel. Today, those bagel prices are still up at that shop. They haven't come down. So I think the media owes the public an explanation of what really is causing that. This past week, we called on, Farmers Union called on, the congressional committees that held hearings that had the various players on why food prices were going up, to invite those same witnesses back and explain, you blamed the farmers before, now let's find out what's really driving up food prices.
Your last question comes from Mario Parker from the Bloomberg. Mr. Parker, proceed with your question.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Question, with the new Obama administration, he seems to be pretty friendly toward ethanol. How likely is it that you all will get your wish to go to higher blend levels? And also, what steps are you guys going to take to push for that as well?
Well, we think that growth energy's goals are very aligned with President-elect Obama's goals. Obviously, they are creating jobs for Americans, creating energy independence for our country, and creating a cleaner environment and decreasing global warming. So we see tremendous alignment between our goals.
Okay. And now, how are you guys gonna go about pushing for this higher blend level?
Well, obviously, we'll be working with the administration, in any way that we can.
Okay.
And it will take EPA intervention to move that blend wall. So we're working with EPA as well.
Gotcha. Thanks a lot.
And we're gonna cut it off there.